Mini episode 1869 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1869. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Steve Callis. We are here for the 2025 MLB playoff preview. And with this being mini episode 1869, I am tempted to make the joke that we're about to tackle the reconstruction of baseball as it goes into the postseason. Too obvious of a joke, but here we are to talk baseball playoffs. And again, as noted off air, this is one where, I mean, this has been the traditional triumvirate for any number of years. Steve Callis, Ken Detweiler, and myself, and our great friend Ken Detweiler passing away back in March. So it has been difficult to do the baseball segments this season without having him on here with us. It's been the three of us traditionally together. But again, Steve Callis, one of the greatest contributors on the show, not just in baseball, but in any number of different areas. So it is never, ever, ever a consolation prize just to do a segment with Steve Callis. Great to have you on, my friend.
Looking forward to it. We should dedicate this one to Ken every year.
Yes.
One at the beginning, one at the end. But as sure. I said to you off camera, a dyed-in-the-wool baseball guy, great guy, loved the coach, knew what he was talking about, another unusual thing you don't find much nowadays, frankly. And as I said to you off camera, I mean, these guys are not being replaced because it's such a difficult now where you have 100 options when you're 10, 12, 14, 16 years old. And it's so hard to play. It's so hard to understand. It's so hard to be good at. I think a lot of kids just now bag it for, you know, whatever they bag it for. I don't want to go into other sports. But kind of bothers me. But when you feel as you get older, as I'm certainly getting older, and you miss a guy like Ken, because you know what he knew, and you were happy to sit here and listen. I wish we had three pictures here. But he'll be sorely missed, but a wonderful baseball man and a wonderful man. Forget just the baseball stuff. But got to know him over the years, thanks to you. Spent some time with him out there when my son Johnny was working out there in Cleveland. And great guy, great baseball guy. I'd be sorely missed. But, you know, I think we should do this in his honor.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, Ken always enjoyed doing the segments with you. And that was something where we always felt that you would have been an excellent part of back in the day, one of the predecessors to this show at the Sports Talk Network, Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler, where I was a sidekick to Ken, along with his late great brother-in-law, Don Coster. The three of us always had a lot of fun together. You would have fit in great if we knew you back then. And as was proved by all the many, many, many segments over the years with Ken. And this is one where, again, Ken would have been very, very much in his glory watching the Tribe make the run that it made in recent days here. I'm not being unsupportive of that, by the way, wearing what I'm wearing. I'm wearing this Astros jersey somewhat ironically, partially because it's awesome, because the rainbow jersey is one of the greatest jerseys in the history of sports, and because it's a George Springer jersey. And I had George Springer on my keeper team for 10 years. I'm a big George Springer guy and rooting for him in Toronto this postseason.
Yeah, he still can play. He's unbelievable. You know why I'm happy the Astros didn't make the playoffs? I was hoping somehow the Astros and the Tigers couldn't make the playoffs, because then we would have got the Astros manager in 2017 out of there as well. But they had an all-time collapse, which the Guardians took advantage of, which I know we're going to talk about. So I'll save it for them.
Okay. Well, also, by the way, it was not possible to be clear of all of that, because Boston was going to make the playoffs at this point no matter what. So you've got Boston and Detroit in the mix, Houston on the outside looking in. Houston, the most famous of the examples of cheating, but of course Boston and the Detroit manager implicated as well. And looking at this here, and this is one of these things where, again, guys like me and you, the old timers here, as it were, as far as our perspective anyways, if not our chronological ages, as far as how we look at the game, the one caveat that we put on this, and like, oh, greatest rundown in the history of baseball, what the Tribe just turned around and did, and then it was bigger than what happened in 1914. It was bigger than what happened in 1978 with the Yankees and the Red Sox. But the thing is, your reward for that is you get to host Detroit, who still makes the playoffs, in the first round. That's where we are now. And it's like one of them's the 3 seed, one of them's the 6 seed. And that's basically all this ended up being, the way that Houston kind of went into the crapper once they started. The injuries were taking that big of a toll on them. At that point, I mean, it's not obvious in retrospect that both were going to make the playoffs, but with the way that Houston was sinking like a rock, both of them end up making the playoffs. So it's a bit of an artificial distinction, not to pour cold water on this whole thing, but I'll say this, and I'll say this as a frustrated longtime Cleveland fan who, again, continues to be very, very skeptical because the ownership spends approximately $5.17 on this lineup every year. Again, it doesn't mean anything if they don't advance. It means absolutely nothing if they don't advance.
No, you're right, but we'll look at Cincy and the Mets. The Mets was one of the great collapses of all time, obviously didn't make it. And the Reds did make it, but and I know we're going to go into all the series, but I really don't give them much chance, but they made it. So you never know, 3 games. My other pet peeve, which maybe we've talked about in the past, in the old days, they had after 162 games, it was like one game. It wasn't a playoff. It was just one game, and people complained about that. But then when the stars, the number of the seeds, you know, when they were taking 5 or 6 days off and losing to the lower seeds, then they stopped that. I still think when you have a case, suppose the Guardians, well, I'll use the Yankees and the Blue Jays. I think the Yankees and the Blue Jays tied, and they should have played one game for the first seed. I think that would be fair. Have them play on Monday. Everyone will complain about the pitching. I get it. But I think also at the end of the Guardians, who thankfully won that game, right? The Guardians finished ahead of that. But if the Guardians and Tigers were tied, I'd almost have them play on Monday and then start everything on Wednesday. Have the non-people who played on Monday play on Tuesday and have the other guys play on Wednesday. Now, again, people will scream and yell about the pitching. And the pitching is so, you know, you're hoping that your starters will go 6 innings now. If they come out for the 7th, it's like, wow. And if they make it to the 8th, they're, you know, superstars. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to see how many of those come out this year. Because a lot of these younger guys, frankly, Rick, who have pitched really well over a year, have now gone 50 innings over what they ever pitched before. You don't know how they're going to be in October under the pressures of the playoffs and under the pressures physically of pitching a lot more than you've ever pitched before. Or you know, some of these relievers who are pitching in 70 games for consecutive years, when they get into the playoffs, it's October, 70 appearances. I understand it's for one inning. If it's 2 innings, it's a miracle nowadays. You know, I take you back to Goose Gossage complaining about Mariano Rivera, where Goose Gossage used to come in the 7th inning with the bases loaded, you know, and Rivera's, I agree with him. Rivera's the greatest one-inning relief pitcher of all time, period. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You got a lot of guys back then, and Goose Gossage is high up on that list, who would come in and always pitch 2 innings, maybe 3 if they were in trouble in the 7th inning. So I think there's a 2 different things, but you have to look, I think, at people who don't make the playoffs a lot, who now have pitched a lot more innings than they pitched in the past, and see if they can really carry through. Because now, you know, for some teams, you know, Padres have a great bullpen, for example. You go 5 innings with a starter, you got guys who can fill it in. And that's been happening the last few years. I don't like it myself, but again, that's old time stuff.
By the way, and those are very, very good points. And an observation I have that is germane just to the aforementioned Tribe, and that is I was listening on the radio this afternoon when I was in my car. There was a gentleman that I had once interviewed. I've been part of an interview with him on the old Reality Check show on the old Sports Talk Network, Bob DiBiasio. Don't know if he still is in the media relations part of the Tribe front office. But I was chastised back in the day that, like, after the interview was done, we went to commercial. I made some kind of crack about, boy, am I thirsty for Kool-Aid right now. And that didn't go over very well. But
Don't drink the Kool-Aid, Rick. Don't drink it.
Yeah. I mean, Bobby D, nice guy, right? But everything the guy says is so unctuous as far as I heard. The thing that I heard today was that, like, they're like, oh, well, the thing that's great with our manager right now is he trusts the young guys. Like, there's a lot of managers that will, like, make you earn your way into there. And I'm sitting there in my car and I'm like, CJ Kafis and George Valera, like, some of the only guys that don't suck are green. You're going to go with them because at least they have ability. They're not a schlep like Angel Martinez or Rocchio or some of these stiffs out there that, like, what are they doing taking up space? Like, I'd rather go with a young guy who's got promise, even if he's green, if he doesn't suck. So I'm like, listening to this, I'm like, what an amazing Hall of Fame caliber spin that was, right? To, like, oh, you got to go with the young guys. Yeah, you got to go with the young guys if your veterans are absolute hot garbage in many cases, which half this Tribe lineup still is. But nevertheless, I will predict that the team wins the first round against Detroit. I'm going to say Cleveland in three in this series just because, again, Detroit's had one foot on the banana peel for a long time now. And I will say about this as well that, like, I remember looking at Detroit when they were standing astride the American League and just looking up and down the line there. And I was like, this team seems like a really good team, but they don't seem great. And my whole theory about baseball, as far as, like, in the course of a 162-game season, regression to the mean, progression to the mean, whatever, if you're that far, you know, if you're out kicking your coverage to that degree, which I think in retrospect Detroit clearly was, then the snapback can be more severe. And I think that's what we've seen. I think Detroit has basically come back to earth. And it doesn't come back to earth in a way that evens out. Like, oh, now they just look like a really good team. No, if you look like the 27 Yankees for a while there, then you're bound to look like, you know, the 24 White Sox at the end of the other end of the spectrum. And they have looked like the 24 White Sox an awful lot, Steve.
Yeah, I hear you.
So that's my pick.
Okay, well, I actually have Cleveland going farther than you then, because I think aside from what they've done, which is borderline miraculous, I'll get into that in a sec. I mean, I think they can beat the Tigers, and I do think they can beat the Mariners. I know the Mariners are good. I know they got a switch in and catcher hit 60 home runs, which is, again, incredible. I could just get to that briefly in a sec. But I wanted to talk about all the comparisons to the 1914 Miracle Braves. Okay. So, as you know, the Guardians were 15.5 out in July. The 1914 Miracle Braves were 15 games out on July 4th. I went and did some research on this because I'm so interested by it. But here's why I looked it up. I'm watching SportsCenter now, which some of these new people, I don't even know who they are. I don't know what they know. I don't know where they came from. Everybody's trying to get their own sayings. They're trying to be super cool. And one guy said, well, you know, if the Guardians can win this division, they'll be the first team, the only other team in the history of baseball who won their division by coming back from 15 games is the 1914 Miracle Braves. Well, you're falling out of your chair because, of course, there were no divisions in 1914. 24, 34, 44, 54, or 64. And you're sitting there going, oh, my goodness. Just decided to do some research. I know a little about them, but I did a little research, which I think you'll like, vis-a-vis the Guardians. So in 1914, first of all, they were in eighth place. Take nothing away from the Guardians. They had to jump three teams. The 1914 Miracle Braves had to jump seven. They were legitimately in last place. Even the White Sox were behind the Guardians when this started. You probably know that. But I was looking at what happened, and the Giants were in first place. The New York Giants, managed by John McGraw, with their star pitcher, Christy Mathewson. I mean, there's names here we know. So right. They had won three pennants in a row, 1911, 12, and 13. And they're winning on July 4th. And who's going to worry about the Braves, who are 15 games back, literally 15 games back? But as happened, and again, I did some this is fascinating. You know how nuts I am with this kind of stuff. But the Miracle Braves had two Hall of Famers. One of them was Evers, from Tinkers to Evers to Chance, who had left the Cubs.
Okay.
So they have that poem about them, or song, or whatever it was.
That's right.
Yeah. That's because he was double play. So Evers that year, I think it was Johnny Evers, he won the MVP playing second base. They had a shortstop named Rabbit Marinville, who's also in the Hall of Fame. He was the shortstop on that team, and he was second in the MVP voting. The MVP was given out by a car company back then.
But in the Hall of Fame, with like a .258 lifetime batting average or some such.
As most of those middle infielders had, not Honus Wagner, but you're right, because back then, you know, we're not going to get into talking about guys who hit home runs first time.
Right.
Judge has 20. I think he broke the all-time record of home runs in the first inning or whatever. Again, your second baseman and shortstop for what, 70 years or more? Was like the .250 guy who got on base once in a while was a really good fielder who could turn a double play, especially the middle infielder. But in any event, so I looked at the Giants, and the Giants, John McGraw was the manager. Christy Mathewson was there. He was like 23-10. But they had a pitcher who's in the Hall of Fame named Rube Marquard. Now, Rube Marquard, in early July of 1914, won a complete game, 21-inning game, 3-1 over the Pirates. He threw all 21 innings, okay? This guy was a star. He'd been one of the top guys in 1911, 12, and 13.
I think I saw Blake Snell do that once.
We'll talk about Blake Snell later when we get to the Dodgers. But yeah. In any event, this guy was 8-8 when he won the 21-inning game. And he had a couple more starts. Maybe he won two and he lost one or whatever. He was right around .500. And then he lost 12 starts in a row. And that's how the 1914 Miracle Reyes became the 1914 Miracle Reyes. It's like the guy we talked about. The shortstop goes deep in the hole, makes an incredible throw from the outfield. He just gets the guy at first. Well, he needs a guy who's running slow to run any of those plays. If you got a guy who's running fast, they never get thrown out at first.
Right.
So whatever. So in any event, he goes 0-12. Not only do they catch the Giants, they won the pennant by 10.5 games. So these are things that nobody knows because nobody cares. But once I got in there, how could the Giants lose? They had won three pennants in a row. Well, that's how they lost. And I guess back then you'd pitch 21 innings.
Yeah.
21 inning complete game.
Yeah.
And won. And then he fell off a cliff. And so I just thought it was interesting. But I give the Guardians all credit. But again, they jumped over three teams. It's a different game now. I totally get it. Again, if you come out for the seventh inning, if a guy threw 21 innings today, the manager would be fired by the 10th inning.
Right.
Maybe the 11th.
So
I just thought that. But I give the Guardians credit. Not only do I think they can beat the Tigers, I think they can beat the Mariners. I take nothing away from the Mariners. And I'm a Yankee fan who believes that Raleigh should be the MVP. They're going crazy in New York now because Aaron Judge had one of the greatest seasons of all time. This is a switching kid. If you had someone who really did it deep, like records that will never be broken, I think you're saying no switch hitting catcher is ever going to hit 50 home runs, let alone 60. Because Salvador Perez, I think, was like at 47. I know Johnny Bench had 40. He had the record. Neither of them are switch hitters either. So I think it's incredible now, but he's... And again, some of these, there was so much with home runs. I don't want to get off on a whole tangent here. So many weird home run, positive, unbelievable home runs. A switch hitting catcher hit 60 home runs. The Yankees, I believe, hit 9 home runs in 2 games this year.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever hit 10 home runs in games. But the first 150 years of baseball, only 2 teams, one each, had done 9 home runs in the game. The Yankees did it twice. I think they hit 3 home runs back-to-back-to-back a few times. Nobody's ever done that multiple times. It was a rookie, Nick Kurtz, hit 4 home runs, and 3 guys hit 4 home runs in the game. How did this happen? Launch angle?
Kurtz was like the bluest of blue chip prospects. So there is that, you know, part of it. By the way, whatever happened to the dialogue around torpedo bats? Because the first week of the season, we were hearing that with the Yankees. Yeah. And I think that was when they were doing a lot of the damage there. So
apparently they're still legal and nothing has been made bigger than that because they're part of it. I know other teams were using them in May, I think. And I haven't really heard much about it. I don't think Judge does. I watch Judge's bats. It looks like he uses those Sam bats or an offshoot of the Sam bats, which I'm familiar with because my son, when he was playing, you know, big time travel baseball, was using the Sam bat. They come down from Canada, and I don't think Stanton was either. But you know, the Yankees had 5 guys over 25 home runs. I think that's happened before. I don't know, but the home run stats are just crazy to me. There's nobody's looking at, you know, was he taking anything or did he come up positive for anything? Not taking anything away from the guy. But only Mantle was the only switch hitter to ever have more than 50 home runs, 52 when he won the Triple Crown in 1956, and 54 when he was going with Roger Maris in 1961 to beat the Babe. Mantle, everyone says he didn't play the last 2 weeks of the season. That's not true, but he played hurt, and he did miss 4 or 5 games very late. I'm not saying he would have hit 61, but I thought he's the greatest switch hitter of all time, and I still think he is. But, you know, Cal Raleigh, unfortunately for him, you know, signed a 6-year, $106 million contract before this season.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they give him a bonus. But I got the beating the Tigers and beating the Mariners. I don't know if you want me to
That's remarkable. Yeah, looking at that part of the bracket, look, I almost never in any round, not never, but almost never pick sweeps. Sometimes I will in the wild card round just because it's only, you know, best of three. I'm picking a sweep in the divisional series. Sorry, Tribe. I've got Seattle in 3 over the Tribe. I think that's where the dreams go to die. I'm big on Seattle. We'll talk about that a little bit more. By the way, and I want to circle back to, I'm going to, you know, see your ESPN reference to divisions in 1914 and raise you one. Okay. This is something where I don't know if this is a bit of media criticism that crossed your plate, but Monica McNutt on SportsCenter in the morning, and it tells you all you need to know that she was responding to a SportsCenter guest, comedian Drewski. He was wearing a classic Barry Sanders jersey, which we all know what that looks like. And she was like, oh, that's such a nice Shedeur Sanders alternate jersey, or whatever it was she said. But she just assumed it was Shedeur Sanders. So it's like, welcome to ESPN.
You know, I've heard about supposedly when you try and get a job at ESPN, they ask you, like, who's the left guard on the 23rd ranked team in the country or something. Somehow everybody knows this. But then you see these kinds of things and you just shake your head. Because I've always thought that the world of ESPN thinks that, you know, the world of sports didn't even start in 1978 when ESPN started, but more like into the 90s, you know, when they got really heavy into live sports and everything.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I'm telling you, they should find some old guy to sit up there and say something. Well, there were no divisions before 1969 in baseball. So if you're referring to anything from 1900 to 1968, no.
Yeah. Well,
that's a great one. I mean, to not know Barry Sanders, I mean, everybody should know. I still use Barry Sanders all the time when I talk about football players. I'm trying to think who it was. Aaron Glenn running down that last week when they blocked the field goal. And I text Johnny and I go, there's a minute 45 left in the game. You think the Jets are going to win this game? Neighbors on the Giants who did this after an incredible late score. And then they lost the game. At least I don't like when Curry does this. The old Steph Curry would have never done this. This is pushy to me. But he does it now. At least they win, Rick.
Well, yeah, that's true. And, you know, as far as it goes, I mean, that whole thing right there, you know, the urban legend is that, as you're saying, that when they give you when you go to get hired at ESPN, they give you like this hardcore sports knowledge test. And if you get more than 5% right, they round file you. Like, you're not what we're interested in. So that's what I've heard anyways. So, but the other part of the bracket in the American League, you've got a fascinating, fascinating series. And the one that ESPN is going to slobber over the most out of these four matchups, of course, Boston and the Yankees. And Boston has really had the Yankees number this year. And I had picked the Red Sox to win the pennant coming into the season. So based on how they have matched up against the Yankees thus far, even though it's complete home field advantage, every game will be at Yankee Stadium in this round. I'm going to say Boston in 3. And then I'm going to surprise some people also as well. I'm going to say number 5 Boston over number 1 Toronto in the American League Divisional Series. I think it's going to be Boston and Seattle in the ALCS.
Okay, well, I'm going to go different, as you might know.
Okay.
Look, you're right. The Red Sox, I think they won 8 out of 13 games this year. I have their record down. There were certainly a few games over 500 against the Yankees. But also, in my view, fortunate to make the playoffs, frankly. I mean, they did make the playoffs, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But I have the Yankees beating the Red Sox. I just think the Yankees now, if they're remotely hot offensively, look, they don't have the greatest defense, that's true. Their starters are going to be fine. Their relievers are coming now this late. You know, the relievers, which was a problem. They're now getting better. And all of these teams, I heard them talking today on Baseball Tonight about how the Dodgers, for example, the Dodgers are going to use, they have so many starters that they're going to take some of those starters. I have said, and I don't think this is going to happen, that they should have groomed Ohtani to be a reliever if they have so many starting pitchers who are good. But we'll get to the NL in a bit. I got the Yankees beating the Blue Jays. I'm not like you. I would say three, though. I can't pick them like you with the games. But
okay.
And then I have the Yankees beating the Guardians to get to the World Series.
So where have we seen this before?
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Where have we seen this before? So, yeah, well, you know.
No, well, hey, they're good. I'm kind of, I don't know how you feel about this, but I'm kind of glad that Tito Francona made the, made the playoffs at least for this, for Cincinnati.
He deserves it. And I have expected that he was going to elevate the young talent there on that team. I'm not surprised that they are a playoff team. I figured he would get them there at some point. And I will say also, the one thing about the Yankees, though, to say that their ninth inning is a crapshoot is an insult to shotguns with diarrhea shells, okay? So, I mean, you don't know what you're going to get there, Steve.
Well, Bednar has been their closer for the last 3 weeks or so. He's been very good. Now, how's he going to be in the playoff game? Mm-hmm. You know, they paid the Devin Williams a ton of money. He was lights out last year. Now we're hoping, you know, he'll be the seventh or eighth inning guy. But again, for the last few weeks, Rick, they've been pretty solid. I'm not going to say great. Padres have a great, for example, the Padres have you know, great bullpen. But I think they have enough to get by. And Fried won't win the MVP, but he had an MVP season. Rondon was like 18-7 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Fried was 19-5, I think. So I think they've got that squared away a little. I'm no Aaron Boone fan. They've been up before this year. I mean, how many years do you manage the Yankees and not win anything? Even Joe Girardi won one.
Right. That's right.
So he's got to be running out of time. Don't give me the, oh, it's the sixth time in 7 years he made the playoffs. What does that mean nowadays? We go through this every year.
Right.
Two teams, four teams, six teams, seven teams. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Let's have the NBA on the 7th through 10th in each. I wrote an article once for MSG Network, and I wrote, I think they should have, now they should just have in basketball. I'm trying to think how many teams were in there. This is like 20 years ago. But I wrote they should just have 14 two-team divisions.
Okay.
Take the winners of all the divisions and then give the highest second-place finisher. Put them in there too as the wild card. And I mean, what are we doing? You know what all this is.
Right.
I mean, the NFL has seven teams now. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And there was a team, the Diamondbacks. They were right at or under 500 until the last week of the season. If they could only win, they only three games out of a playoff spot.
Right.
I think it's horrific, but it's all about the money, so that's never going to change, obviously. But, I'm going to have, in the American League, I'm going to have the Yankees beating the Red Sox, beating the Blue Jays, beating the Guardians. I think they could do that. I really do.
Well,
look, their bats are just, when they're on, they have the scariest lineup. Now, a lot of them are lefties.
Yeah.
Well, they do have Aaron Judge, who I think, frankly, is going to have Stanton. But, you know, there are other home run hitters who didn't strike me as, you know, real home run hitters. But Chisholm is. He's a lefty. Don't forget the short porch in right field, because that's what they all make a living off of.
Yeah. Well, and again, in both leagues, and we'll see this with the National Leagues, I expect us to diverge a lot in our picks there as well. Man, it is just so hard this year. I just don't remember a year when it's been as jumbled. And there's teams at the opposite end that I think we can rule out of this as far as making the World Series. Both of the Ohio teams, sad to say, the Tigers, but it's like you're left with about eight teams overall, maybe like four out of six teams in both leagues that have some degree of plausibility here. By the way, say what you will about the Yankees, erstwhile closer Devin Williams. I say this as a North Coaster. At least that guy wasn't putting the first pitch of the inning in the dirt 3 foot in front of him deliberately, allegedly, Mr. Class A. So, you know, yeah. So that is a disgraceful situation now there, the way that has all played out with the Tribe losing a couple of their pitchers on the whole first pitch prop bets thing here. To top off my American League picks, I will say I'm going with Seattle over Boston in six. I'm going for the Mariners to make their first ever World Series. So as we go to the National League, again, you and I talked about this before, and this is a thing where, and I just texted a good friend of the show, Scott Pullins, a little bit ago to congratulate him. He's a Reds fan. And I was like, hey, man, we're going to get to see some old school, Reds and Dodgers. Now, they never played in the playoffs in the 70s. I think they did in 95, but that's not what we remember when we think of these decades. Or, you know, we think of the 70s when we think of these teams. But, this one, I think Cincinnati can take them to three. I don't see Cincinnati being able to put them away, even though the Dodgers this year have not been what we have expected them to be. And again, I would say also, too, don't assume that once we flip over to October that they're not just going to become the Dodgers again like they were last year in October. They're at least going to make it out of the first round. I got them making it in three. And then I've got them taking on Philadelphia in the second round, which, by the way, I mean, this is one of these things here, too. Speaking with a fellow baseball history nerd here, like, what is it about the Phillies and the Dodgers that, like, late 70s, 08, 09, like, now, like, the Dodgers have been really good a lot of times when the Phillies weren't, but especially in recent history, it's almost like the Phillies will only be good when the Dodgers are good. But I've got the Phillies over the Dodgers in five. I think that's going to be an all-time classic. I've got Philly making it to the NLCS. How do you see that side of the bracket holding up?
I'm a little different, as you might have guessed. I think the Padres are going to beat the Cubs.
Okay.
And I think the Padres are going to beat the Brewers. I think the Padres are a real sleeper team here now. They're healthier. Their bullpen is great. Tatis Jr. is lightening up again. You know, he was hurt, then he was doing okay, then he was not doing so well, but now he's on fire. They need Manny Machado to live up to his contract, which he's, you know, kind of a up-and-down guy. But I have the Padres beating the Cubs, and I have the Padres beating the Brewers. Love the Brewers. Old-time, you know what they say about them, right? Old-time baseball. Don't hit a lot of home runs. But, you know, they have great defense. They have really good bullpen, blah, blah, blah. They know how to play. They play small ball sometimes. But I just think the Padres, you know, I picked them to do well a number of times in the last few years, and they've always disappointed me. But I think this year they make it to the finals to go to the World Series.
Okay.
But I have the Dodgers beating the Reds. And then I have the Dodgers beating the Phillies, but if I'm allowed to do this, Rick, I want to say, to me, whoever wins the Dodgers-Phillies five games in the second round, whoever wins that is going to win the World Series.
Very interesting. I could very plausibly see that being the case. Now, where I'm going on this, I'm going with San Diego also come out of the first round against the Cubs. I'm going to say in three. I think that one's going all the way. So the San Diego Padres will successfully avenge the 1984 National League Championship Series. And then in the second round, I've got Milwaukee over San Diego in five. I, too, have a lot of room in my heart for the Padres as far as what I see there. Remember, they were my pick to win the World Series a year ago before flaming out in the first round. I think I had Padres-Astros in the World Series with the Padres to win. But I'm picking Milwaukee over five in five over them. I think it's going to be a classic. And I think, again, I expect there's part of the thing here, too. When you say the team that wins this could end up winning the World Series, you think we'll end up winning the World Series. The only caveat I'll give to that is sometimes a series like that, you know, one of these, you know, battle of the bulge kind of things like that, you come out a little bit gassed. In a close series, I think that makes the difference. I'm saying number one seed Milwaukee over number two seed Philadelphia. Milwaukee goes to the World Series for the first time as a National League member, of course, making it in 1982, coming up short against St. Louis. They're now Central Division mate in that World Series. I'm going to say a six-game fall classic here, a World Series where Fox will be slashing their wrists because of the makeup of the markets here, much like the poor NBA, which had to suffer through Oklahoma City, Indiana. MLB gets their time in the barrel here with Seattle and Milwaukee. I'm going to say Mariners in six. The Mariners win their first World Series. The Brewers are still looking for number one after coming up short for the second time in, 43 years. So you have neither of these teams there.
No, but to be clear on mine, I have the Dodgers beating the Yankees, a repeat of last
Dodgers
year.
Dodgers beating the Yankees, okay. Yeah.
But my backup is if the Phillies beat the Dodgers, then I'll have the Phillies beating the Yankees in the World Series.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Because again, and let's talk about this as well. We talked about this, and I will say, I think we were a little bit ahead of the curve when we did our playoff preview last year. We were talking about this, that like the best teams in the National League versus the best teams in the American League. I continue to believe that there's a gap. I continue to believe that there's a number of teams in there that would be favored. In the case of Seattle, I just think that their path kind of makes a little bit of a difference here. Drawing the Tribe, I think that's going to be something where they can probably sleepwalk through that. Then you get to Boston. That's going to be a tough series. But I mean, is Boston on par with Philadelphia and the Dodgers and Milwaukee and some of the teams like that? Like, it's a demolition derby in the National League. And then an American League team like Seattle can win if those guys just beat the crap out of each other. But all things being equal, what you're talking about with the Dodgers and the Yankees, I didn't expect last year's World Series to be that competitive. It was a gentleman's sweep, basically. And I would expect more of the same if it's Dodgers-Yankees this year. Because even though the Dodgers have looked mortal, like that would still make them the best of the National League. And the way that the National League is versus the American League right now, there is quite a gap at the top, Steve.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it can be denied when you're looking up and down at the lineups and at the rotations and everything like that. Interestingly enough, the Dodgers, who I think had very little to play for today, ended up going with Clayton Kershaw, thus ruling him out for the divisional series, which is interesting. I mean, again, they're heavy favorites against the Reds, deservedly so.
I don't know if they're being kind because I go through this with Joe every year. We call Kershaw one of the greatest pitchers of all time, dash, in the regular season. Because he's now 14-14 in the playoffs with a 4.49 ERA. And I even saw somebody as smart as Scott Van Pelt talking about him. Because he had, I guess that was his last start with the, you know, like a week or 10 days ago. I thought that was his last start. And they had Clayton Kershaw on. They gave him some stuff on the field. And so Scott Van Pelt, who knows his stuff, I was surprised he did this. He put up, well, you know, some people complain about his postseason record as if he had pitched three games and got his head kicked in. He's 14-14. I think he had like 32 starts or 30 starts or something in the postseason. We've called him one of the greatest regular season pitchers of all time because he's one of the greatest regular season pitchers of all time. But I wonder if they don't even want to use him that much or they're going to use him out of the bullpen. I thought they should have groomed Ohtani to come out of the bullpen. My son was out in LA for work last week, and he went and saw Blake Snell pitch. Ohtani hit a home run, Blake Snell. And this is the game, I don't know if you'll remember this. Here's my other ESPN thing that nobody picked up on. Dave Roberts is going out to take Blake Snell out of the building, out of the game. It's the seventh inning, I think. He's been pitching well, but he's in the gym. Yeah. It's a close game. Still meant something back then. And as Roberts is coming out, Blake Snell, they had a close-up of him. He's going like this. And right away, what am I thinking of? Here comes Kevin Cash to take him out of the World Series. Game 6, pitched the greatest game of his life. I watched that game. I was like, I've seen this guy pitch. This is the greatest he's ever pitched. They took him out 3 batters later. They were losing. When he came out, they were winning. 3 batters. That's Game 6 of the World Series. World Series owner, over. And, of course, afterwards, Kevin Cash said, well, if I had it to do all over again. I pray that whenever they say that the next year, the exact same thing happens because there's no chance they'll ever do it again. It's Pete Carroll with Malcolm Butler, and when he threw a pass in the Super Bowl to lose the Super Bowl, afterwards he said, I got complete confidence in my next year I'd do it again.
Right.
You wouldn't do it again. You'd give it to, you know, you give it to the running back to walk in because he was killing them all day long, you know.
But
I just find and so the next day on ESPN, I expected someone to like put up Game 6 of the World Series where he's coming out, and Snell was like this. No, he'll take me out. And then 3 batters later, they lost the World Series, literally Game 6 of the World Series. So I just thought it was funny. But Johnny watched him. He said the guy was lights out. It was like it was a few years ago. Now Snell's an up and downer, but he's 5-4 with a 2.35 ERA. I thought
And I read something where they said, supposedly they said Ohtani's not. Ohtani hasn't pitched more than 5 or 6 innings. And mm-hmm. only that for 2 starts. He was right. coming in pitching 2 innings. He was starting and pitching 3 innings. Now they right. brought him along, and now he looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a lot of good starting pitchers on the Dodgers. And they already said, again, the guys on ESPN today were like, well, they're going to take those extra starters because they have like 6 starters. And they're going to put them in the bullpen. Well, who's going to react well to that? I think a superstar like Ohtani would react great to that. In fact, I think if you told Ohtani he only had to pitch 2 innings, he'd be even more incredible than he is now. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do think they're deep enough in pitching to be okay. And if Blake Snell can pitch like Blake Snell, I mean, he's like finding a superstar late in the season. Again, yeah. only 11 starts, 5-4, but a 2.35 ERA today, that's incredible.
It is. It is. And by the way, amidst all the hosannas out there about Clayton Kershaw and his career, you might wonder if there's anybody out there that's begrudging him walking away from the game at this point. And there actually is. It's this guy. Let me explain to you. Because last year, 2024, remember he had had the surgery. He was going to miss most of the year. So he ends up going in my long-term keeper league. He ends up going into the draft portion of the thing here. So I get to take him for a dollar for like a number of years. So it's like, I'm going to take him for a dollar for 2 years because I can renew that for the next 2. I'm like, I'm going to have 4 years of Clayton Kershaw. Yeah, it was like a year and a month. Thank you for that, Clayton Kershaw. No, it was a heck of a year this year. He helped me make the playoffs.
He was real good this year, but again, yeah. he was real good during the regular season, and I'm just surprised yeah. that Scott Van Pelt, what he actually did was he put up Greg Maddux's record, which is not good either.
Well,
Maddux
yeah.
is like 11-14 in the postseason,
yeah.
but when he put up the comparisons, he didn't compare the ERAs, which I think right. in his 20, I think he was 11-14, his yeah. ERA, Maddux's ERA was something like 3.1 or something. Kershaw is right. 4.49. And don't forget, and he even pointed this out, like it didn't dawn on him. Kershaw has what, 233 wins or something like that? Yeah. Maddux has like 355 wins.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Can't
yeah,
even
give me
compare.
The comparison. He's always been terrible. It's his biggest weakness. Whenever you're going to talk about him as one of the greatest pitchers of all time, anybody yeah. with half a brain is going to say, he was 14-14 with a 4.49 ERA. And a few of those games came in the last few years when he faced a weak team in the first round of the playoffs when they didn't yeah. get a bye. So yeah. love Kershaw, first ballot Hall of Famer, but please, please don't tell me you can ignore that. We all, what does it count? What you do in the Super Bowl or what you do in the NHL Stanley
sure.
Cup Final or what you do in the World Series. There's a lot right. of guys who were bad. Ted Williams only played in one. He had a broken elbow. You're not going
right.
to kill Ted Williams. This guy had 30 or 32 starts. That's a season nowadays for a pitcher. So don't tell
That's
me.
Right.
So I'm just surprised right. that the level of knowledge of these guys. Kershaw is what he is, an unbelievable regular season pitcher, period.
He is. And after I beat up Kershaw for walking away from the game, I should credit him. He did have a good year this year. This is my high dollar league that I'm in, and he's helping me be like Scrooge McDuck swimming in a lake of cash here for my winnings. So thank you, Clayton Kershaw, for at least coming through for me and helping me win big in the 1 year that I really got anything out of you. But, you know, yeah, we'll have to see if he gives the Dodgers anything here on a World Series run. I see the Dodgers run ending a little more anticlimactically than that, but we shall see. And I guess the last question I can think of is, should the Dodgers win again? This is one of these things where baseball history hinges on this to a larger degree than you would think. You're like, oh, Rick, you're going to say they're the first team since the Yankees in 99 and 2000 to repeat. No. I'm talking about the actual history of the game as a business, because ever since you go to the strike of 94, and that ended kind of anticlimactically, and every other time, we all forget about this, that 9/11, that winter, that was going to be the nuclear winter. Boy, oh boy, we're going to solve the baseball economic problems. Nope, didn't happen then. Every time since then, it's been like, oh, the owners really mean business, and nothing has ever changed. There has been serious talk, more serious than there usually is, that we are going to be in for a labor Armageddon after 2026 if the other 29 owners feel that the Dodgers simply cannot be beat as they are presently constructed. And that basically the ability to go to the upper tier. By the way, at the center might ask, why aren't the Mets every bit as invulnerable? If that's the case, they didn't even make the playoffs. But not that I wouldn't rather have the Mets ownership than the Chodes that own my tribe. But, this is one of these things where if the Dodgers win it again, fuel for the fire of labor Armageddon in the winter of 2026, Steve.
It's so disgusting. How much money is too much? When you ask a millionaire or one of these players, how much do you need? The answer isn't a number. The answer is more. Whatever you're offering, I need more. Soto had a great year. Soto had a great year. He did. He hit more home runs for the Mets. I never thought he had 41 for the Yankees last year. I thought it was because of the right field porch. He had 43 this year.
Yeah.
He's also 0-for-3 with a strikeout today. Everything's measured. And these kinds of days, everything is measured.
Yes.
But it's one of the great collapses of all time. The Tigers had one of the great collapses of all time, but still made the playoffs. So you got to give them some credit. But
yeah.
I think they're in trouble because they've been playing very poorly the last 3-4 weeks.
Yeah. I agree.
Right. You're right. But it's all about this, and it's almost obscene that nowadays. When I was a kid, I remember when I was a very little kid, Koufax and Drysdale held out together. I think they wanted like 100,000 each or 125,000 each. You read about the Yankees 1 year, Joe DiMaggio wanted 40,000 up from 40 to 50,000 or something. And he didn't play at the beginning of the year. And the fans supposedly booed him.
Yeah.
Because he wanted 50,000. You're looking at it now and it's hard to root for the players to get back then. It was like, get every nickel you can. Today it's get every nickel you can, but the every nickel is like, give me another 10 million. Give me 20 more million on my contract. And in baseball, as you know, they're all guaranteed the moment you sign them.
They absolutely are. And again, we'll have to see what, if anything, flows out of the baseball labor situation in the next year, year and a half going forward from what we see this October. Certainly the Dodgers winning, that is going to be a factor going into 2026 and possibly beyond 2026 as far as the economic structure of Major League Baseball. We will keep eyes peeled on that as we always do. Steve Callis, wonderful to have you on for the playoff preview, my man. And I look forward to hopefully reconvening before the World Series. Thank you so much, buddy.
Always a pleasure, Rick.
Great pleasure to have you on, as always, my friend. The great Steve Callis from the Callis Remarks podcast with Joe Stazak. Catch that wherever you get your podcasts. An amazing show in its own right that I have been fortunate to be invited on many different times here. Thank you, Steve, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1869.